Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is Jim Henderson, and I am Director of the Energy Transition Programme at Oxford and also Chairman of the GAS Programme. And we'll be discussing for the eighth time the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on energy markets. With me this week, I've just got Mike Fullwood. Jack's taken a week's holiday, so we've just got Mike on the call today. But Mike, you're very welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, Jim.
I want to start by talking about prices because they've been relatively benign, if you like, or quiet over the last few weeks. But we've had a few kind of events, if you like, around cutoffs and discussion about ruble payments over the last week or so. So how's the price reacted to that in Europe?
Yes, I mean, the TTF price, if you look at the sort of month ahead price, which is the main one used in contracts, that's sort of been a sort of steady sort of downward drift over the last few weeks. It was up about a sort of €100 a megawatt hour and then slowly drifted down through the 90s. And in the last week, it had drifted into sort of the high 80s. So that's still obviously enormously high compared to where it was, you know, even pre-pandemic. So, but it has sort of drifted down. And then yesterday, with the first rumours and the announcements that Netherlands and Denmark were going to get cut off for not complying exactly with the Russian decree on ruble payment, that they would be cut off, and it sort of promptly jumped €3 a megawatt hour at business opening yesterday to about €90 a megawatt hour, then stayed at that level until I think almost in the last half an hour it sort of dipped back down €3 a megawatt hour. So it's fairly early now on the 1st of June, so we'll have to wait and see what happens today. But it doesn't seem to have reacted too badly to the cut off of what were relatively small flows, but we'll come on to that.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning the date. It's always important to date stamp where we are. So yeah, we're recording this on the 1st of June. So we've talked in the past on previous podcasts about the UK being slightly separated and the price on NBP being at a discount. Is that still the case?
It is, yes, both on a day-ahead basis. So there's a fairly wide discount on a day-ahead basis and on a sort of month-ahead basis. The discount does disappear as you look at the forward curve into the winter. As we've talked about before, the reason for the discount is that effectively the UK is almost as disconnected from European prices because the export routes, BBL and Interconnector, to export gas to the continent are at max or even running over capacity. So you can't get any more gas out. And there's still quite a lot of LNG coming in. Norwegian flows, UK production is quite steady. So there's nowhere for the gas to go. So basically, it's the UK market has been typically sort of oversupplied. We've also been burning a lot of gas in UK power stations and almost ironically exporting the electricity to France. So we're not exporting gas, we're exporting electricity on the interconnectors.
Wow, a bit of a turnaround from history. But okay, interesting. I mean, obviously that points to, as you've said, if anything, the UK being oversupplied, a lot of LNG coming in. I think there's also a differential in the prices between LNG being sent out from European regas terminals and TTF as well. Is that the case? And if so, why?
Well, it's the price, the delivered price to the terminals where there's a big discount to TTF. And again, it's the same rationale, is that the Northwest Europe terminals, whether it's Dunkirk, Zeebrugge or Gate, they're all pretty much running at very, very high send-outs, very, very high number of cargoes coming in. And there isn't enough room for a lot more to come in. So they're at quite a big discount to TTF, not as big as the NBP discount. But the Northwest Europe LNG price, quoted by the price reporting agencies, is fairly similar to the sort of JKM sort of Asian price. That still makes Europe very attractive for US LNG and other Atlantic-based LNG. But it's, it is that discount is reflecting the fact that you can't get any more LNG in. I mean, TTF is almost like a separate little market at the moment for sort of Northwest Europe compared to the global prices.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that Asian price you've mentioned and also talk a bit about LNG flows. But before we do that, let's come back to those Russian cutoffs. I mean, so we've had Poland and Bulgaria, obviously, we're aware of. And now Finland, obviously, has refused to pay the rubles. And literally in the last 24 hours, as you've mentioned, we've got Denmark and the Netherlands. It's all kind of starting to add up. I mean, is it becoming significant yet? And so what impact is it having on flows in Northwest Europe?
Well, it does. They're all actually fairly minor, apart from Poland, which was reasonably significant. They're all fairly minor volumes compared to the whole Russian exports to Europe. Finland is a slightly more constrained because that market is a little bit isolated, but they've been sort of topping up through the Baltic connector. But there's limits to the amount of gas can go into those markets if it's not Russian gas. You really only got the Finland is its own very small LNG import terminals for very small cargoes, but they're relying a bit on Lithuania to feed gas up and through. But you can also get gas up through Poland into Lithuania and then on to other countries. In terms of Denmark and Netherlands, again, the contracts were relatively small. The Dutch one would have about 2 BCM left for the rest of this year, and it was going to end anyway in September. Denmark, again, is a very, very small contract. But you're right, it is all starting to add up. So we're now left with sort of what you call a hard core of in northwest and central Europe of countries who really are very dependent in a significant way on Russian volumes. And I think, you know, the EU had a summit last couple of days to talk about embargo and oil imports, which they've done at least for tankers coming in. But there was statements, I think, that even this morning or overnight that they're basically saying there's not going to be sanctions on gas. I think that for them to do that now, that's really gone away.
And indeed, I noted that President Putin even was saying that, you know, supplies to countries like Italy and Austria are pretty much guaranteed, and that they've basically agreed to Russian terms. So it looks like, so as you say, there's a split emerging between those that will and won't continue to import Russian gas.
Yes, there is. I think the and we have seen sort of some of the flows adjusting to the Danish and Netherlands cutoffs yesterday and today. In Nord Stream 1 been running largely at the absolute complete capacity for historically for many years, and that's come off a little bit, maybe sort of about 8-9% of the capacity, reflecting the Netherlands and the Denmark flows. And Yamal Europe is now closed. I mean, they basically ripped up the contract there. So it's just flowing gas effectively from Germany into Poland. And on the Ukraine route, there's obviously the Ukraine TSO sort of called a force majeure on the smaller southern entry point from Russia into Ukraine. And that has reduced flows coming in Slovakia. I think those flows are also probably be coming off in June a little bit as well. So flows now are at quite what I might say sort of critically low levels for the rest of Europe. Assuming they continue, then we may just be okay through the summer, but winter could get very tight for reasons we sort of may come on to.
Indeed. And just to finish off on the kind of Russian flows, Turkstream continues to flow normally, at least for this time of year.
Yeah, it's flowing into Turkey, then there's the onward flows into Bulgaria, into Serbia and into Hungary. So Hungary is now being supplied by Turkstream, so that is flowing pretty normally, and is moving towards capacity, probably will do for the winter.
Okay, and in terms of then the non-Russian flows, I mean, we've talked a lot about Norway in the past. Volumes there still flowing freely and at pretty high capacity?
Yeah, it's pretty much flowing maximum capacity into France, Belgium, and the Emden, Doorn terminals for Germany, Netherlands. And then in the last quarterly, we did a little bit on Algeria. So there was obviously discussions between the Algerian and Italian governments about Algeria supplying Italy with more pipeline gas. There's quite a lot of confusion, I think, on this extra 9 BCM. Algeria doesn't have an extra 9 BCM of gas to send to Italy unless it diverts from elsewhere. It does have a spare 9 BCM of capacity to move along the Transmed. So Algeria really is in a position to supply other than a few more molecules of pipeline gas to Italy unless it does divert from either from LNG or diverse pipeline gas away from Spain.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I mean, the quarterly came out in the last week of May, and there is a piece there on Algeria, as you mentioned. I mean, you've talked in the past about that diversion of flows, the potential to divert Algerian flows to Italy and for Spain to take in more LNG. There's obviously been that dispute between the Spanish authorities and the Algerian authorities around the re-export of gas to Morocco. I mean, do you think we're heading towards a scenario where there is that diversion and Spain has to take in more LNG?
It's possible. I think there's a lot of sort of saber-rattling going on. I think, given the configuration of the pipeline systems, then Spain could export to Morocco. But whether it's the Algerian pipeline molecules going there or LNG going there is a little bit debatable. So I don't think there are any signs of that happening at the moment. So I think we'll have to sort of watch this space on that one. But if it did happen, then clearly Spain has vast regasification capacity, so could supplement that with more LNG, which would actually free up more pipeline gas to go to Italy. So I think the market would sort of balance its way out of that situation.
Okay, well, you mentioned LNG, and we should come on to that now. You talked about the price discounts for LNG being delivered into regas terminals in Europe earlier. So I presume that the implication of that is that lots of LNG is still arriving in Europe. Is that right?
It is, yes. I haven't looked at quite the final May figures yet, but it looks another very high month. There's still a lot of LNG supply, available on the market. It's sort of coming to Europe. So May is another high month. It does look for early indications. June's going to be probably a pretty strong month as well. So in terms of the year-on-year comparison, I mean, last summer flows into Europe were very weak. So it's not that difficult to beat last summer's flows of LNG into Europe. From September onwards, however, that's when LNG to Europe really, really picked up. It'd be difficult really to increase for the last 3 to 4 months of the year. We should be able to increase LNG compared to last year over the next few months.
Okay, and I think, obviously this with LNG being a global market, the impact in other parts of the world is pretty significant as well. So you touched on JKM earlier, but what's happening with JKM in Asia? I mean, are we seeing customers in Asia, basically suffering as well?
Well, yes. I mean, JKM is probably for almost the last year, or certainly the last 9 months, has been just like a derivative of TTF. So TTF has been dragging global prices up. JKM sort of followed up. That has, in some economies, particularly India and Pakistan, which is a bit more price-sensitive markets, we've seen LNG imports year-on-year go down in those markets. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, really, it's more demand-driven there. And a lot of their prices aren't linked to spot price anyway, especially the power sector, the more contracted prices. We've seen quite very strong flows into sort of the Southeast Asian markets, Indonesia, Malaysia in particular, Thailand, because of issues in Myanmar gas, Singapore, but most of those tend to be oil indexed LNG, so they're not necessarily suffering from the higher spot prices. Whereas India and Pakistan do import quite a bit of spot LNG.
Okay, well that's an interesting point about that. So essentially, Europe's taking LNG, the uncontracted LNG at the margin, but there's still a lot of flow into Asia.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's essentially taking LNG away from what we might call the less developed, the poorer countries, the ones who can't afford spot LNG at those prices.
Okay. I mean, the other country to talk about, I think, is the US, where obviously there's been a lot of focus on US LNG exports increasing. But the Henry Hub price has risen very sharply as well. I was seeing it was over $9 an MMBTU at some points at the end of last week. Is this an arbitrage with global markets, or are we talking about domestic issues here?
Yeah, it is almost all domestic issues. There's LNG has been leaving the US in sort of record quantities, and the export terminals have been exporting well above nameplate capacity. So that's obviously pushed a little bit of demand for US gas. But the rapid run-up in prices is a number of factors. One is obviously it's looking to be very, very hot this summer in the US, which brings a big cooling demand for the power sector, and gas feeds a lot of that. Their storage levels, as they were in Europe, suffered similarly with low storage levels. They need to rebuild storage, is sort of pushing sort of demand up. And then on the supply side, there's, you know, the drillers have not been drilling as might have been expected so much, certainly for the dry gas shale plays. Given the high prices, now that may change. They've been sort of returning a bit more money to their shareholders who've suffered at the hands of low prices. We've also seen issues with pipeline capacity, both in Marcellus, the ability to build or new pipelines, get it all certified because of protests at the FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, by some environmentalists and through the courts. But also what we've seen now in Texas is oil production, I think, is picking up quite a bit there. And with the associated gas, they're now having difficulty again evacuating that gas from the Permian Basin to the Gulf Coast. So there's a big differential opened up between Henry Hub and the West Texas hubs. New pipelines are being built. They don't really have to go through the same sort of processes for an intrastate pipeline in Texas as you do for an interstate pipeline. So they should come on reasonably rapidly. After that, we could see quite a big pickup in US production, I think, with that probably coming into next year.
Okay, so, I mean, we don't anticipate these prices and some of the issues you've mentioned in terms of production and infrastructure limiting US LNG exports anytime soon.
No, I mean, yeah, you can't anyway get any more out of the US terminals, really. I mean, we obviously got the Calcasieu Pass. I think there's reports this morning it's gone to FERC for its sort of eighth little module to be put into commercial operation. So there's a little bit of increase to come from Calcasieu Pass, but then we're looking at a few years out before we get some more US LNG. So no, I don't see over the next few years any sorts of limits on LNG exports from the US because of a lack of supply.
Okay. I mean, the other interesting topic I want to talk to you about, I mean, we talked about prices now, but there's starting to be some emerging concern, and you've already touched on what might be happening this winter, about shortages, actual availability of gas in the winter. I mean, particularly in the UK where you and I are based, there's been some mention in the press about rationing. What do you think about that? Are we actually facing a kind of an availability issue come the winter?
Yes, I thought it was a quite bizarre report on the 6 million people facing power cuts, and I think it was in the Times on sort of Monday morning, and ministers were talking about sort of asking coal to keep back on and extending Hinkley Point, the nuclear plant, although I think EDF has said they can't do that. I thought it was quite bizarre. They clearly don't read the papers or the ministers. Some of our publications, I mean, Jack Sharples did one on the impact of the Russia-Ukraine dispute on the UK market, which sort of said there's less to worry about than we might think. It comes back to the issue of the UK being effectively having more LNG import capacity than the rest of Northwest Europe put together. So a lot of LNG comes to the UK, and as I've said, being re-exported effectively down the interconnector and the BBL pipeline to Netherlands. So we're kind of one of the first port of calls for LNG. Plus, there was talks about diverting gas away from Norway to the continent. Well, that's all well and good, except you can't get any more Norwegian gas into the continent, possibly until the pipeline by Denmark and Poland from Norway is completed. But that initially will take gas, possibly in the fourth quarter of this year, away from the Germany entry point. Now, you could move a little bit of UK or Norwegian gas destined for the UK to that, but it wouldn't be that much. So in the event there is a curtailment of Russian supplies, but from what we said earlier, this seems to be a receding likelihood anyway. The UK will continue to get a lot of LNG, a lot of Norwegian gas, and be exporting a lot down the interconnector. The real risk is of a cold winter. That then could cause problems in terms of the ability of the UK to export down the interconnector. Because in a cold winter, we'd normally import from continental Europe. Clearly, we couldn't do that. So I guess the combination of complete curtailment of Russian flows and a cold winter, that could cause some problems. But in the absence of a cold winter, a normal or a mild one like we had this year, even if Russia flows completely cut off, I think the UK would be in reasonably good shape.
You talk about a cold winter there. I mean, the implication being in Europe, but I mean, clearly there's in the Northern Hemisphere, there are some other very big importers. I mean, in Asia particularly. Are you concerned about what might happen to demand in Asia? It's been very benign, and I know one of the reasons that, you know, we haven't had as many problems as we might have had is that demand in China particularly has not been as strong as expected. But that presumably could turn around. Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I mean, there's if you could do, there are two elephants in the room. One of the elephant is the curtailment of Russian flows. The other elephant, I think, is the is China. Now, China demand has been extraordinarily weak so far this year for LNG with the COVID lockdowns, and also the fact that it was a milder winter in Northeast Asia than last year. So demand has been weaker, but now they're, I think Shanghai has announced it's out of the lockdown starting this week. So we'd expect demand to pick up. And there's been talk about a stimulus package as well. So China demand, I think, this is one of the key issues coming into the winter period, the fourth quarter. If that starts to pick up strongly, then Europe's going to face significant competition for LNG, even though supply will be a lot better than last year. And if Russia flows even just continue at where they are now, obviously it's really a lot lower than last year, then we could get a situation of a very, very tight market. So I'd be sort of, in some senses, a lot more worried in terms of the impact on the European markets of rapidly rising Asia demand, especially China, than actually the curtailment of flows from Russia. That's the real issue I think we have to face in the winter.
Okay. So obviously a bit of watch out for that. I guess final question then, I mean, is the one I normally ask Jack, of course, which is what's happening with storage. But I mean, in the light of what you said, how are injections going? You know, will Europe and the UK indeed be ready by October? And, you know, what are the big variables there?
Well, actually, I mean, it's the storage story has been remarkable in April, and especially in May. I mean, as I think Jack said in the last podcast, in April 2021, there was barely any net injection to storage. This year, it was about a 6 BCM net injection. In May, I haven't checked on the numbers the last for the whole month yet, but it could well be a record month for injection into storage, the highest injection ever. It's certainly probably going to equal what it was, I can't remember which month it was a few years ago. But we're looking at about 14 billion cubic metres or slightly more being injected to storage. So it's looking relatively healthy at the moment. And the reasons for that, I think obviously the LNG coming in, it's actually been reasonably windy as well in Europe in May, except the last 3 or 4 days where I noticed wind power was down quite a lot. But also we have seen this price differential open up between the summer months, you know, the May, June, July TTF numbers, and also the numbers that looking out in December, January, February. So the differential is there in dollars a million BTUs. It looks to be about $2 or $3, which is a more than enough differential to actually, if you wanted to hedge your position to put gas into storage now and take it out in the winter, you could do so. So the economics are looking more favourable. Will Europe be ready by October? Yeah, we go back to where we started really with the lower Russian flows, the cutoffs. Yeah, Poland, Bulgaria, Finland, yeah, Denmark, Netherlands, all that is adding up. And in effect, any lower Russian flows, as we've seen, makes it that much harder to reach the storage target. So we're sort of on course to reach it now, but it could start to get quite difficult around September, October time if we are seeing LNG being pulled away to the Asian markets. So the 80% target at the moment, if things continued even at lower levels than the main numbers, we could reach it. But I'm slightly concerned, yeah, come September, October, that there won't be the gas coming into the European market to fill the storage. So I don't know what the EU do about that. If there's just physically not enough gas around to fill the storage up.
Okay, well, on that rather somber note, I think we'll come to the end, and we'll obviously keep watching Russian flows and LNG flows, and hope the injections, you know, remain at very high levels, and we can get up to that target sooner rather than later. But Mike, thank you very much indeed for your contribution today. We haven't missed Jack too much, I don't think, but for his fans, he'll be back next week with his numbers on flows and his analysis of European demand as well. So until then, thank you very much indeed for listening. Please stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.